Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness, and thanks for listening. Tonight I have Susie Cohen, and we're going to talk about her book, Drug Muggers, and interactions with drugs and supplements in your daily life. How are you, Susan?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Eva.
Sorry, I got distracted. There's somebody in my house was standing in front of my face talking to me, and I couldn't focus on what I was doing. I'm sorry. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, how to find you, where to find your books, and how you came to do what you do.
Sure. Well, I've been a pharmacist for 20 years. I have a license in Florida, and I started out the traditional way, and that is just with a lot of drug knowledge and clinical information. And somewhere along the way, I realized that prevention was key and that thinking outside the pill was actually a lot healthier for people than taking a lot of pills. Information about me, aside from being a pharmacist, I've also been a syndicated columnist, so my column on natural health appears in newspapers nationwide and also online, many internet sites that are related to health and wellness. You can reach me at my website, which is dearpharmacist.com, just kind of like you're writing a letter, dearpharmacist.com. And I'm also the author of several best-selling books, so I do a lot of stuff.
Susie, this Drug Mugger book, that's the only one I have of yours, is one of the most useful books I've ever read for the average person walking around trying to figure out what to take with their medications, how to take supplements, how to take medications and not die from them.
Mm-hmm.
So question I'd like to ask you is, what do you recommend about the recommended daily allowance?
That's a good question. I don't think that the recommended daily allowance is really that great of a guideline. I think it's just more of something that a patient can springboard because the numbers that they recommend are very, very low. They can't possibly deliver better health. The USRDA was really just developed to keep people from dying of a deficiency of a particular nutrient. So, for example, the USRDA for vitamin C, I believe it's 60 milligrams, but don't quote me. The point is it's very low. It's actually just enough vitamin C to keep you from dying of scurvy. That does not translate to better health. The book, Drug Muggers, is, well, I should probably explain that, and I will in a moment, but it's designed to help people navigate the aisles of their health food store and know what tricks to avoid, what nutrients they need, and what vitamin companies are really good and what to look for. So that's one major goal of the book. The other goal of the book is to keep people from taking one drug after another and just basically getting on a medication merry-go-round. What people fail to realize is that one drug that they're taking could be causing all sorts of other symptoms that get labeled as a new disease by the doctor. So one good example of the drug mugging effect, which also defines the book, is statin cholesterol drugs. A lot of people take these medicines like Lipitor and Zocor and Mevacor. I mean, these are blockbuster drugs. These drugs help lower cholesterol, but they mug nutrients such as CoQ10. Then you have leg cramps. Well, what happens? The doctor tells you you have restless leg syndrome and you need a new drug for that.
And you have gut problems, too, a lot of people.
And then you have gut problems, and you're put on acid blockers, and then you start to lose your memories, and they tell you that you've got the beginnings of dementia or Alzheimer's or, you know, and on and on and on. Well, I'm not saying that people shouldn't take their statin. I'm saying that in my book, Drug Muggers, that the answer to why you might be feeling very badly or developing new diseases could just be related to the fact that the one medication that you're taking could be stealing you and slowly stealing the life out of you.
Is there an alternative to statins like niacin? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's alternatives to statins that, you know, people can discuss with their doctor. There's lots of natural alternatives. A lot of people think that omega-3 fish oils are very useful, and there are studies to support that. I actually agree with that, and also coenzyme Q10. Vitamin C is a very mild, natural vitamin that works similar to statins. And there's a beeswax derivative actually called polycosinol. And niacin, I mean, there's lots. That all of that information is actually in my first book, The 24-Hour Pharmacist. I have a whole book full of information about natural alternatives to prescribed drugs. But that's, again, in my other book.
Let me ask you something about the polycosinol. I heard that if you're going to take that for that purpose, that you must take the polycosinol from sugar cane.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Does it matter the form?
Well, I don't think that form matters that much in terms of, you know, how it's going to affect you. I've just heard that people who supplement with the sugarcane extract do have fewer side effects and seem to do better. But, you know, each to their own. If I was going to take it, I guess I would try. I would probably try the sugarcane first. But, you know, what it is a combination for every person. So some of the patients that I recommended polycosinol did wonderful, and they were able to get off their statin, and others required something else to bring in with it, for example, niacin or omega-3 fish oil, and they did fine on that, or they had to switch around.
Mm-hmm.
See, not every single person will respond to the same drug or the same supplement regimen. It's very, very individual.
Does it matter which niacin form you take?
Yeah, because, you know, with niacin, you could get a flushing effect, and it feels like what most women would call a hot flash. And so if you take one of the sustained release forms, that helps to combat that effect in your body. And, you know, that could make the difference between you staying on it and not staying on it. So that would be important. And I have a whole chapter on niacin. I definitely think that niacin can help you lower cholesterol, but it's also very, very helpful in opening the capillaries, so it can help people who have Raynaud's disease or intermittent claudication, which can cause cold hands and feet. And any kind of problem where there's poor circulation, niacin can be very, very helpful, and of course it raises good HDL cholesterol, and it lowers two nasty things. One is LPA, one is fibrinogen. Those can cause a heart attack. So anything you can do to lower those nasty things is good, and niacin does that.
I have another question right here, just to alert people. Aren't there three forms of niacin, and one of them doesn't work very well, and the other one?
Yeah, it gets confusing because the names are kind of long. What the one that I recommend, and it's long too, it's a flush-free form of niacin. Again, it's not going to cause that heat or that itching that some people get. It's called inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L, inositol hexaniacinate. And it's just less irritating to the stomach, and I think it's flush-free, so I think that that's good. And there are many brands at the health food store. You know, that's important. And here's one thing, may as well mention since we're on niacin. This is in one of my chapters in Drug Muggers. Some of the drugs that you're taking mug your body of niacin. And when you run out of this B vitamin, your cholesterol shoots up. So some of the drugs that do that are antibiotics, and, you know, almost all of the antibiotics. Celebrex, which is a very popular drug for arthritis and joint pain. Estrogen-containing drugs. Millions of women take these medications in the form of birth control or hormone replacement. Water pills, very popular ones like Lasix, known generically as furosemide. Again, these are very, very popular medications. Also, some laxatives. They are drug muggers of niacin. And again, when you run out of niacin, you have decreased blood flow, poor circulation, less blood flow to your heart, and higher cholesterol.
One other question about mice, and then I'll move on if you want to. Doesn't the flushing have some positive effects relating to mast cells and their load of histamine?
The flushing effect tells you that the capillaries, the teeny tiny capillaries, are actually opening up, which is it's a good thing. You want your small capillaries and arteries to open up, because what it does is it shakes away nasty things that's been clogging them, because those capillaries were kind of squeezed tight. So it's okay to have that, but sometimes it just becomes too much. It can be, you know, so intense that people just, like, within an hour, they just turn beet red, and it's just awful. One way to avoid that would be to take, like, a baby aspirin about an hour before you take your niacin, or to try some of the other, you know, brands that, like, I mentioned that inositol, and these are also mentioned. I mentioned brand names in my book. On page 121, formulas that you could actually take.
Doesn't it pass if you continue to take it over time?
Does it pass? You mean it because it's a B vitamin?
I mean, doesn't it?
It's water soluble.
Doesn't it stop flushing so bad after you take it a few
times? Yeah.
Okay.
The effect does eventually kind of wear. The way to do it with niacin, if you don't want to take the flush-free form, because the regular form is less expensive, is to just start low and go slow and build up, kind of titrate your way up to a higher dose little by little, and yeah, then you won't really feel that
okay. So
much. And it's not everybody. It's not a bad thing. It can be if you're very sensitive and you get a major dose of niacin into your
Are you taking any calls? We do have a caller. If you're
can
taking
calls.
Okay.
I think I heard my producer kind of say that. Put it through, Don. Maybe not. The other question I
Hello?
Have, yes? What's your question?
Hi, Eva. This is Warren in Atlanta.
Hi, Warren.
Hi, Warren.
You were talking about niacin. I just wanted to ask you a question. Many, many years ago, I went through a cleaning procedure that was called a purification rundown.
Mm-hmm.
And the hot flash that occurs with niacin, actually it's funny because years later I had a friend that thought she was going through menopause, and it just turns out she was taking way too much niacin. But the theory was that it actually brings out radioactivity that you've accumulated in your life. Is there anything to that, or is that just hokum?
Well, you know, I've heard that, and I think it's, personally, I don't think that that's possible. I don't think radiation or radioactivity kinds of, like, sunlight, I don't think things like that are stored in the body as a chemical substance. I think what happens is radiation or radioactivity or, you know, free radicals from sunlight exposure and sunburns can cause damaged cells in the body and a whole cascade of them, which can trigger tissue damage and even organ damage, but I'm not sure that niacin would loosen that up. Niacin won't scavenge free radicals. What it does is it dilates capillaries. So if there is something stuck in there, then it will loosen it up. But radioactivity, I don't think, gets stuck in your cells.
I know it damages your cells,
and I know that it causes a high incidence of cancer and tumors and you know, damage like that. So I know that it has a direct effect on the body, but I'm not sure that it gets stored in the body. If it does, if it actually does get stored, then, yeah, niacin would help loosen that. And they do use niacin in these, like, personal discovery purification things. It's very useful for that because it shakes the body loose of a lot of gunk that are trapped in the capillary.
Okay.
Good question. Thank you, Warren.
Well, I was a little skeptical of that when it was happening, but I just wanted to see what you thought.
I think the best way
do they actually use it in radiation treatment though?
Niacin?
Like for example, if someone gets overexposed to a reactor environment.
You mean like a Chernobyl thing?
I'm just not necessarily that bad. like a Brown's Ferry thing, when there's a loose radiation thing, can it help? Or does actually do that? That's sort of what I'm wondering. Does it actually help release radiation from your body, or was I just being fed a bunch of stuff?
I'd have to look it up. Well, I do know that one amino acid is helpful to help prevent problems from radiation, and that's called L-glutamine. And glutamine is sold in health food stores nationwide under all sorts of brands. And I think glutamine is useful because it can help prevent or reduce the amount of radiation-induced organ damage. Can niacin do that? I don't honestly know. Niacin dilates the blood vessels. It helps flush the body clear of all sorts of things. And there are some people that suggest that niacin can help be the antidote to radiation exposure. I'm just not familiar with all of the research to definitively say, yes, go do that, or no, don't do that. You have to think it out. Since niacin does dilate blood vessels, it will shake the body loose of toxins. Is radiation stored in the body? I don't know enough about that procedure. I know that radiation causes free radical damage and damages cells, and those damaged cells might become clear of the body and sweep away in the presence of a very strong antioxidant, such as alpha-lipoic acid, or people, drink a lot of green tea or matcha tea. Another strong antioxidant is, I said alpha-lipoic acid. Another one is CoQ10, and another one is astaxanthin.
All right.
There's many of those things. So if you've been exposed to radiation, if that's what we need to focus on, and, other listeners, a lot of people have had those treatments, then those supplements I just mentioned would be at the top of my list. Strong antioxidants such as, again, alpha-lipoic acid. I would also do the L-glutamine and, drink a lot of matcha tea, which is a form of green tea, and astaxanthin. And there's others, too, CoQ10. There's others.
Okay.
Thank you, Warren.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. One other question I thought of, Susie. I'm sorry.
No, I enjoy them. It makes me think. This is what I'm here for. And, people call me America's most trusted pharmacist because they know that I'm not out to sell them the next best pill like the television commercials do. My work and my column, which people can get my column for free, by the way. Subscribe at my website for free. It's dearpharmacist.com. You can get my syndicated column every week for free. And also my books are sold there, so I do this for a reason. It's to help people, and my heart and soul is in it.
A lot of people that
cool.
take niacin get edema in their feet and ankles. Why is that?
Well, they shouldn't be getting it. It's opening up the blood vessels, so blood starts flowing better. They do get more blood flow to their hands and feet, but if it's pooling there, then that would be a problem with the heart not being strong enough to pump the blood back up the body out of the feet. But it is causing greater circulation, which is exactly what you want when you want to take care of people with circulatory issues like Raynaud's syndrome and other things. And one more thing I should talk about, before we leave the B vitamin family, because niacin is a B vitamin. It works together in conjunction with the other Bs like thiamine and folic acid and riboflavin. The Bs work better together than one does by itself. And the best way to explain it is like a concert. A flute is very nice to listen to a flute, but the whole symphony actually sounds lovelier. And it's the same way with the B vitamin. Niacin is a powerhouse in terms of what it can provide to the body. But together with its family and its other sisters, boy, a lot better. So I always tell people to take a B complex instead of just one. And if you feel that you need, one of the Bs because you need to push that harder, maybe you're taking a drug mugger of of niacin, for example. Well, that's fine. Drive the niacin, but also take a B complex so that you have all of niacin's sisters on board.
Okay. Now, let's talk about forms for a minute of supplements in general. Magnesium, the B vitamins, C, zinc, calcium. Is there a form that's mm-hmm. better?
Yeah, there's all kinds of levels of form, and you know, it's easy to say, well, you get what you pay for, but you know, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you pay an awful lot and you're still getting garbage, you know, because there's a lot of money that went into advertising for it and all this. So, you know, one of the examples I can think of that I think is a high-priced form that I wasn't really behind was the coral calcium. Where people were just dumping just so much money out of that. I don't think that that's a great form of calcium. And then another form that people buy, millions of dollars are spent on calcium carbonate, and it's sold in various popular brand names at health food stores and pharmacies nationwide. But calcium carbonate is pretty much just kind of like chalk. You know, it's a little bit nicer version of it, but it doesn't really leave the gastrointestinal system to go into your bones. And unfortunately, a lot of women take calcium carbonate because they're worried about osteoporosis, so they want it in their bones. But this isn't a highly absorbable form. So, yes, to answer your question, the form does matter. So, you know, that the best form of calcium citrate for the money, I think, is calcium citrate, which, again, you can buy everywhere. So calcium citrate is better than calcium carbonate. And as far as the Bs go, it gets a little confusing to try to outline this on the radio, but the Bs come in different forms, and a lot of them aren't really active until you put them in your body, and then your acid does the trick, and then your stomach breaks them down, and then you have these friendly bugs in your body called probiotics that help also with the B vitamins. And so there's an active form of the B vitamins, and this is all thoroughly explained in my book. It's just kind of hard to get into the radio, but basically the Bs go into your body, and we have to activate them. But certain brands of vitamins will sell you those active Bs already.
What do they look for to know if it's active or not?
It'll say it on the label, usually, you know, active form, or the back of it will be, it'll say something, for example, with vitamin B6. It's known as pyridoxine.
Well,
so on the back of...
I'm curious. I'm still here. Is niacin a B?
Niacin is a B vitamin.
It is?
It is a B vitamin. Mm-hmm.
Which one?
It was the third B vitamin to be discovered, so people sometimes call it B3.
Okay. Okay.
And what about...
Wilson, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Good night.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you, Eva. Bye.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
What about zinc? Is there a better form of zinc?
Zinc comes in all sorts of forms. The thing with zinc is that I love zinc, by the way. I think zinc is very, very important because there are studies to show that it helps men with prostate function and it helps men with fertility problems. It also protects all of us. It helps protect our DNA, which is our genetic code. And so, you know, zinc is very important. And now with this whole swine flu problem, you know, people are worried about their immune system and what can they do to boost their immune system. So zinc is a fantastic mineral because it also doubles as a antioxidant. And studies show that it could actually shorten your misery time if you get a cold. And I also think that zinc could support your immune system, and it might help you prevent getting a cold or a flu. I didn't say zinc prevents you from getting swine flu. What I said was zinc can help rev up your immune system, making you less likely to catch miserable, nasty things as they come around each season. So it's just part of the pie. It really is part of the pie. You can, you know, take all kinds of zinc supplements or zinc lozenges. I like those because they taste so nice. can do that all you want, but if you're going to eat fast food every day or every other day, it's not going to matter. So it's just part of the pie. But, yeah, zinc is important. And there's a lot of drug muggers for zinc. People have no idea, but, you know, there's about, you know, 100 of these things that steal zinc from your body. And, again, you need zinc for your immune system. You need it for sexual function. You need it for fertility. You also need it for hearing. People who run short of zinc sometimes lose their hearing. So, and eyesight as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What about, how do you know if you need copper? Because you want to know that's connected somehow with zinc.
Zinc.
How do you know if you need that?
Yeah, zinc, too much zinc will actually cause a copper deficiency. So you want to be careful on how much that you actually put into your body. So I would think that, you know, if you're going to stick to a lozenge, just take one every day, or a supplement, just actually follow the directions on there, because too much zinc will cause too little copper, and too little copper actually looks similar to too little iron. So, for example, what I mean by that is when people already know what anemia looks like, they're very tired, their cells lack oxygen, they have skin problems, they're pale. So it's similar to that. Low copper can cause, actually really super low copper can cause hallucinations and depression. People who are binge eaters run out of copper. And
binge eaters, is that what you said?
Binge eaters. And
okay.
Guess what else? You can run low on copper if you eat a lot of refined white flour, you know, white baked goodies that are made with white flour instead of whole wheat.
So is it safe to supplement copper? Because I know too much is also not good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, I would just, under the direction of a doctor, it's okay to supplement with copper if you want. But the way that I recommend doing copper would be through food sources. Oysters are very, very high in copper and zinc. Shellfish, nuts, dark chocolate, leafy green vegetables. Yeah, I know I had to giggle with that. And those are good sources, actually, of all the minerals. And if you wanted to actually supplement, I would take a trace mineral. You can buy those at health food stores nationwide. It says trace minerals, mm-hmm. and it'll give you copper in the right combination with your other minerals.
I guess you would. Do you recommend a liquid form of that?
Copper? No, I would
just... you recommend that over an oral...
whatever someone wants to take. If they can't swallow and have trouble with that, then they could do some of the liquids. They're tasteless. You can get liquid minerals. A good way to get copper and other minerals like zinc and magnesium and potassium would be to drink greens. A lot of people like to mix those powdered greens with some
mm-hmm.
water. And, you know, they taste kind of minty if you get a good brand. And that's an excellent source of minerals. And so, yeah, to do a liquid like that. But some people, they just can't get the greens down. Like, they don't like the taste. They say they taste like they're drinking freshly mowed grass. Well, then go get a supplement that says trace minerals on it.
Okay. What about vanadil, vanadium, and chromium?
Those are trace minerals that would also be in a supplement, and they would be in those powdered green drinks that I was just talking about. And they're useful because they help with eyesight. They help prevent, well, they help support the pancreas, which may help prevent diabetes. And they also help with bone integrity. So if someone worried about osteoporosis would benefit from a trace mineral that contains, you know, vanadium, all the ones that you said, all of those.
Now, I know some people react by getting lung edema when they take vanadium or vanadil and chromium. Do you know why that is?
No, I don't know why someone would get lung edema from those minerals. I do know that one way to clear the lungs of fluid, just generally speaking, one could try N-acetylcysteine, which is also abbreviated at health food stores as NAC. N as in Nancy, A as in apple, C as in cat. And NAC stands for N-acetylcysteine, and in the right dosage, this can help clear the lungs of some fluid and edema. And people with emphysema and other respiratory disorders do take NAC with good effect. And again, this is something to discuss with your doctor. And everything I say in my books and during this interview, you know, they're just guidelines. I'm really just trying to point people in another direction and maybe open their eyes and their minds to something outside the pill. That sounds
strange.
Yeah,
I always do like to do a waiver. We're not doctors. We're giving you information.
Yes, and my book, the intention behind it is to help people feel better. By no means do I mean to say that the medicine that your doctor has prescribed is wrong for you, because it might be right for you. Thank God we have some of the medications that we do, because some of them save lives and they help us breathe, and, you know, like asthma drugs, and they help us take us out of pain. And, you know, I'm proud to be a pharmacist, but I do think that some of, you know, the antics by Big Pharma just drives me crazy, because it feels to me like they're trying to sell a pill to everybody for pretty much anything, you know.
If you take N-acetylcysteine, first of all, what are cofactors, and do you need a cofactor?
N-acetylcysteine, well, a cofactor is something that just assists with, It helps you get to the end product. So you see cofactors in a lot of enzymatic reactions. And I love NAC. It's actually one of the chapters in my book. So it's important to get the right form of that, and it turns into glutathione. And I forgot your question, Eva. Go ahead.
Well, now that you bring up form, what is the right form? And I wanted to know, does NAC need a cofactor like C or something?
Oh, yeah, okay, because my mind was going 100 miles a minute. Yeah, NAC works better, I think, with vitamin C on board. And the reason I say that is because a lot of people have found that when they take NAC for several months, they have a higher the risk for stones. And so kidney stones. So what you want to do is you want to have some vitamin C on board. And this is debatable. A lot of people will say, well, you don't really need that. It doesn't really matter. But I would say that if you were going to have a certain dose of NAC, that you would want to take about half as much of vitamin C with it. And again, this is debatable. But some of the formulas that you buy do contain it that way. They actually come with the vitamin C. Now, the wonderful thing about NAC is that it's actually a heavy metal chelator. So it'll grab nasty metals, like I'm thinking mercury or cadmium or arsenic, like nasty metals, but it'll leave those good ones we just talked about, like zinc and copper. So it's like a smart heavy metal chelator, and it keeps the essential ones on board, but it grabs the nasty ones out. And that's a good thing, because those nasty metals can lead to high blood pressure and brain damage and liver damage and, you know, all sorts of problems.
Let's see. What about neuropathy? Do you have I get a lot of questions about neuropathy.
Yeah, we can talk about neuropathies. One thing that I wanted to mention about the NAC, though, I just wanted to get this one in, because I just can't resist, because acetaminophen is an over-the-counter drug that people use for pain and fever, and people take this a lot for joint pain and arthritis, and it's a drug mugger of NAC. Actually, glutathione, which is what NAC becomes. Long story short, people who take Tylenol might want to supplement with NAC, and this is all covered in my book, Drug Muggers. It's actually, I devote some space to that. Now, neuropathies, boy, that's a real painful kind of nerve pain. And
we have 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to cover amino acids, lysine, arginine, taurine, tyrosine, too, before we get done. So.
Okay. Well, one thing with neuropathies I would say to take would be a B vitamin, B12 to be specific. And the best form of vitamin B12 would be methylcobalamin, and this is also covered in my book. But methylcobalamin actually can help certain people remyelinate. So one of the problems that people have in neuropathies is that the myelin, the nice fiber coating around their nerves, has gone. So vitamin B12 in the right form can help a person remyelinate. Another thing that can help them would be alpha-lipoic acid. It's known classically for its ability to help with nerve pain, and a lot of people get nerve pain that have diabetes. So that's one thing. There's also a product that you can buy. It's over-the-counter. You can look online for it. It's called Neurogen, and it's applied topically. It's like a gel, and you can apply this to your skin in certain instances. Neurogen can be helpful for people as well.
What about, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say that it may help for nerve pain. And there's one more, too, if you want to go over it. I'll tell you one more.
Go ahead.
It's an over-the-counter cream that is in health food. Actually, it is in pharmacies nationwide. I'm not sure if health food stores have it, but it's known generically as capsaicin. And capsaicin is actually hot chili pepper cream. It's derived from the chili pepper. And in mild cases of nerve pain, you can apply this hot pepper cream to your skin and work your doses up very slowly, because if you do it too fast, you're going to make your nerve pain worse, okay? But when it's done properly, it can really help people with neuropathies and even trigeminal neuralgia, which is a very painful facial pain syndrome.
What about, I remember you and I having a conversation about carpal tunnel and B6 as
mm-hmm.
well. What do you have to say about carpal tunnel issues?
Yeah, carpal tunnel syndrome, I've seen where vitamin B6 can help people, and actually I've seen a lot of it, but the best form of vitamin B6 would be the active form of it, which is known as pyridoxal 5-phosphate. You can buy this, it's called P5P, or if you can't find it, don't worry about it, just take the vitamin B6 and just take a little bit of a higher dose. And it takes some time. It's not like a drug where you take your vitamin B6 and, oh, voila, the pain has gone. You know, it could take some months. And also, you can stretch it and maybe eliminate what's causing it. For example, if you're a typist or you do data entry, maybe limit your hours and maybe see a chiropractor. They can do an adjustment to your wrist, like, not your back, because people think chiropractic, they think your back, but they can actually do an adjustment to the wrist that might be helpful for a certain percentage of people.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just trying to think, you know, maybe there was something else. I think maybe a little bit of Motrin might work, but, you know, that just masks the pain. What you want to do is take care of the nerve pain itself, and all the supplements I mentioned a few minutes ago would be useful as well.
Now, does B6 help neuropathies combined with 12 and the complex?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, now let's talk about the amino acids. I just have so many questions here, it's hard to get them all in. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I like questions, and I'm your basic average nerd, so go right ahead, fire away.
So lysine, arginine, taurine, tyrosine, why would we need those or would we need those?
Mm-hmm. And I could talk for an hour on all of those. Wow. Whew. Arginine is wonderful for the heart. It widens arteries, and it can help prevent that winded feeling and shortness of breath that people get with fatigue, and especially with congestive heart failure. So arginine is wonderful for that. It also sends blood flowing down south to your nether regions, so a lot of guys with erectile dysfunction could benefit from arginine. And also ladies who may have trouble achieving the point of ultimate joy could benefit from arginine as well. Again, it's sending blood flow all over the body, so when you increase blood flow to the sexual region, then, of course, you know, that heightens pleasure, and it can help someone, like a guy, avoid Viagra in some cases. You will find arginine in many sex pills that are sold over the counter and in sex creams that ladies apply. Now, the problem with arginine, the main one that I can think of, is that it drives the production of any kind of herpes-driven infection. So if you're prone to fever, blisters, or you have genital herpes, then taking arginine product can spark an episode with that. So do be
some
careful.
Kind of wart, and I know that because
mm-hmm.
I started taking arginine. And a long time ago, I had a wart on my finger. Well, warts started coming on my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to increase my lysine.
Mm-hmm.
So do we take them together or do we take them an hour or so apart?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
Well, I think it's fine to take them together. I mean, arginine and lysine are often combined in amino acid supplements. You see them taken together, and they don't really fight with one another. They just have to stay in balance with one another. So I think it's fine to take at the same time.
You take the same amount of each? How do you balance it?
I don't know the dosages. No, I'm not really sure. I would follow the label directions. I think I would take, if you're prone to those infections or warts or any kind of herpes-driven problem, for example, shingles is a herpes type of infection, then I would, you know, minimize arginine. But if I was going to take it for an issue, I think it would take about 1,000 milligrams of lysine once or twice daily and check that out with your doctor.
And how much of the arginine?
The arginine doesn't have an established dose. You see it, oh, my gosh, it's got a huge, wide range. So I always just follow label directions. Because if I give you a dosage right now, somebody might be thinking, oh, I got to take five of my pills right now.
Let me ask you this then. Norm Shealy, you know Norm, right?
Mm-hmm.
He recommends for people with heart problems, vessel problems, he recommends 1,600 of arginine. So if you were going to have 1,600 arginine, how much lysine should you take?
I would do 1,000 milligrams twice a day.
Can you do too much?
Sure, you can do too much of anything. Probably give you diarrhea and stomach cramps and all that. I mean, it's a balance because here's the thing. The way that people eat affects how much they need. And vegetarians will eat a lot of arginine because it's found in all the vegetarian foods and the beans and the nuts and the lentils and all that. The lysine, on the other hand, is found a lot more in meat. And so someone's diet will have an impact on exactly how much of each amino acid they need. Does that make sense?
Yep.
For example, if you're a vegetarian and then you're also taking arginine supplements, you're going to need more lysine than a meat eater.
Okay.
Because you're not getting it through your diet.
What about taurine and tyrosine? Why would we need those?
Taurine and tyrosine? Well, taurine is wonderful for the heart. I love taurine. Oh, my gosh. I actually take taurine sometimes. It's great for everything. I don't think anybody can really go wrong with taurine.
What does it do?
It helps with so many things. When I first think of taurine, I think of the heart. Okay, it's an amino acid. It's one of the most abundant amino acids found in the heart and the skeletal muscles of the body. So it's really helpful for people who are athletes or people who, you know, have trouble getting their heart to beat properly. It's been known to normalize heart rhythm in people, and it helps support pancreatic function. It's a very, very strong antioxidant. It also supports the pancreas, like I said, so it can help prevent diabetes. It helps reduce cholesterol. People have studied this, and there's a study that suggests it may be helpful in treating people who have alcohol dependency. And there's probably people listening to that trying to figure out how to get off alcohol. So, you know, you can check this with your doctor, but sometimes people take taurine at a dose of about 1,000 milligrams. Two or three times a day, they seem to do, you know, a little bit better in terms of withdrawal symptoms.
Okay.
Let's see, you can take taurine for so many things. It also helps in the brain. I believe there's a connection to melatonin, so I think it helps with sleep as well. Now, tyrosine feeds your thyroid gland. So people who are taking Armour Thyroid or Synthroid, these drugs, may be able to benefit from tyrosine if they actually weren't taking the drugs. I wouldn't recommend both, but there's a lot of people that are scratching their heads going, how do I get off this medicine? Well, if that's the case for you, then ask your doctor if tyrosine or iodine is right for you, because tyrosine and iodine both feed the thyroid and they help you make a thyroid hormone. Now, too much tyrosine will jolt the heart and make you wired and cause palpitations, so do be careful with that.
Okay. You know, one thing has occurred to me recently, when people start having problems with their heart, first thing they do is they stop salt. And when you stop salt, you stop getting your iodine, most of the people. And you don't think about that. And then you start having muscle wasting and low thyroid. But the doctors do those tests, and they don't do the right tests, and your thyroid says it's fine when really it's not. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I do. When people say salt, they usually mean the sodium chloride that you can buy, you know, served in restaurants nationwide. It's just typical table salt, the white stuff. And that's not really salt as your body knows it, and it's not salt that your body needs. It's just a chemical. It's sodium bound to chloride. And so they make a precipitate out of that, and the precipitate is called salt. But that's not what your body's hungry for. And regular table salt, I think, is bad for you because it can cause you to hold water, and overconsumption of it can cause, you know, all sorts of problems and increase your risk for high blood pressure and hypertension, you know, hypertension and heart problems and all that. But regular salt, like mineral salt, is great for you. You can buy these at health food stores, like sea salt, I'm thinking, the kind that has some pink color to it. Sea salt has, you know, minerals in it that your body needs, and the minerals in it support your body and support health and wellness, and I want you to eat regular salt. You can buy a good one called real salt because it's real salt, and real salt is, you know, it's evaporated seawater. That's what your body understands. It doesn't really understand the chemical known as sodium chloride or table salt. That's just the chemical.
Okay, thank you. One other question. People who have a tendency to hold water, what's a good natural diuretic that has the least damaging effect, but, you know, wasting minerals?
Yeah, I would, people who tend to hold water, I would suggest either golden seal or, well, actually dandelion is probably really wonderful too, because you can buy dandelion at the health food store. Don't go digging up your garden or your neighbor's garden for those beautiful yellow flowers. I'm talking about, you know, dandelion, Tara's that vacum is actually one of the names, and it's a dandelion. And you can buy, it looks kind of like, it's in the section next to parsley at your produce or health food store. It looks a little like basil. It's got these long green leaves. You cut them up, you put them in your salad, or you can cut them and put them into water and steeve it, and then you suddenly have dandelion tea. You can also buy prepared supplement forms of it. And dandelion is nice because not only will it help you as a natural diuretic, but it also protects the pancreas against pancreatitis, and I think it can help with a lot. Also, another one is uva ursi. This protects the bladder. And so does parsley. Eating parsley can help protect the bladder as well and maybe protect against kidney stones. So
can't golden seal contribute to high blood pressure?
Golden seal? Can it contribute to that? Well, I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But it's a diuretic, so I would think it would lower your blood pressure because it's actually reducing the blood volume in it. But if you have high blood pressure or heart disease, then it could be harmful for you if your doctor doesn't approve of it, because what you're doing is you're messing with the mineral balance. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, it could be harmful to people with heart disease because by virtue of reducing the volume of fluid in your body, you're changing the levels of potassium and other minerals like magnesium, and all of these things play a role in heart function. So in that regard, you want to be careful with a diuretic. But with that said, people with these conditions are given diuretics all day long under their doctor's supervision because many of them have trouble with high blood pressure and you want to reduce blood volume. So it's something that should be undertaken with physician supervision and approval.
Well, the natural things like dandelion, will that rob your minerals? Is just like hydrochloric diazide or something?
Too much of these things can be dangerous to the body.
Okay.
So Yeah, even the herbs can be drug muggers of certain things, sure, because it's a diuretic. It may be stealing some of the nutrients just like a drug would. So you want to be careful with all of this. Again, I don't think that people should self-treat, especially with herbs that affect their heart or their circulatory system, unless they're sure that it's right for them and the doctors check them out and, you know, they have good kidney function so they can eliminate well. And
okay, let's talk about one more thing. We've got about 5 minutes left. I want to talk about, go back to calcium and magnesium.
Okay.
I know that you have to have a balance of both. I mean, potassium and magnesium and calcium absorption for bones and things. Norm Shealy says that if you use a transdermal magnesium, that you don't need to take calcium anymore because it helps you absorb calcium from your food. So I'd just like to talk about calcium, magnesium, and potassium. How do you sort of get those things balanced out?
How do you get them balanced?
And if you have time, we've got 5 minutes, DHEA and melatonin. MSM, that's another one.
Okay. Which one for? Well, with the minerals, a lot of times when you eat the greens that I talked about, or take those minerals in a form called chelate, they're chelated amino acid minerals. I think that that's better than when they're bound to other elements that, you know, don't help you. So if you're getting what's called chelated minerals, I think that that would be okay. And yes, magnesium is important to help, you know, drive calcium into the bones, and so is vitamin D. So they do have to stay in a certain balance. Most often when you buy a multi-mineral, then they come in the right ratios for you. And if you're supplementing with green drinks or, you know, eating the right foods like leafy green vegetables and seafood, then again, you're also getting the minerals in their natural form. I always think eating your vitamins and minerals is better than actually taking a supplement because you're getting them the way that nature
provides.
Does it
matter if you have organic or regular food at the store?
It matters to me if you get organic versus synthetic or, you know, pesticide-laden things. So, yeah, organic foods is important, and they taste better. And at farmers markets, you can get organic foods. Now, MSM is important. I think MSM can be very, very helpful for people with bladder issues, and it can also help with arthritis and joint pain. So MSM is found in a lot of arthritis supplements. That's very good. I would take it with food because it can be irritating to the stomach.
Is there a special form
of MSM?
Uh-huh.
Methyl sulfonyl methane. It comes in all different kinds of forms. It comes in a powder. You can mix it with water. You can get it in capsules. I always suggest capsules over tablets because I think tablets have a lot of...
Is there several different forms of MSM, though, that some doesn't work as well as others?
I'm only aware of methyl sulfonyl methane, and if you get a good brand of MSM, then I think that that would be okay. I'm not aware of different forms of MSM, how different formulas of it. And sometimes it comes in combination with things like glucosamine and chondroitin. So you'll find different combinations with it.
Okay.
But I think probably MSM is the star and also glucosamine. I don't think chondroitin matters that much in terms of its ability to help people with joint pain and skin problems. And then melatonin was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Melatonin is also very useful to the body because it helps you sleep. And if you run low on melatonin, then you're not going to sleep as well. And this is covered on chapter 22 of my book, Drug Muggers. There's a whole chapter on melatonin. It's basically nightfall in a pill. And the interesting thing is that a lot of medications are drug muggers of melatonin. And people are always surprised because they didn't realize that, you know, some of their medications that they use for anxiety or for sleep can actually rob them of their, you know, sleep hormone melatonin. So things like clonazepam and alprazolam, Xanax, people know it as Xanax, and Ativan, these are drug muggers of melatonin. Also, some of the other newer ones like Ambien and Sonata, those may be drug muggers as well. And many, many beta blockers used for blood pressure. They're drug muggers of melatonin. When you run out of that, you're more prone to cluster headaches and poor sleep.
You said, I remember something from your book talking about some forms come from cow brains. I don't want that form. So what form do we take?
Yeah, melatonin. Well, that's the one time that I always say, well, take the synthetic form of a supplement. I usually like people to get natural, but natural melatonin, it comes from, some of them come from cow brain. You know, they're extracted from that. And, you know, a lot of people are worried about getting viruses and bacteria from the animals. So in this situation, I think that a synthetic version of melatonin is cleaner. And
does
that's
it work just as well? Oh,
yeah.
we got to wrap up. It's 9 o'clock.
Yes, it works just as well. I think it's fine. And it's what you'll find in most health food stores.
Thank you, Susie.
My pleasure. And if people have questions.
What's the name of your website?
Yep, it's dearpharmacist.com.
Okay. I'm going to call you and have you back.
Take care. Thank you, Eva.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.